Go for it, Mom.
Okay. So we have chairs. If you need chairs, then please use them. You don't have to sit on the ground if you don't want to. Sit on the ground if you're more comfortable. Okay. Thank you all for coming. Everyone get settled quickly because there's too much noise. So we may have class up here in the prasadam room for the next month or so, because it seems like over there there's a problem getting the rooms. Sometimes we get the big room, sometimes we get the small room. It's hard to book it. So we may have class here. We'll let you know. We'll have it here. If there's any changes, then we'll let you know. So last week we discussed Canto 8, Chapter 1. Does anyone remember what we covered so far? Canto 8, Chapter 1. What is Chapter 1 about?
Administration of the manuals.
Administration of the manuals. And we heard about Pariksit Maharaj has asked Shukadeva Goswami that you've so far described to me the first manu, whose name is Swayambhu, and his reign included or was described in Canto 4, Canto 5, Canto 6, and Canto 7. Because we heard about Swayambhu Manu and then we heard about his descendants, Uttanapad, Priyavrata, Akuti, Devahuti, Prasuti, and their offspring. So we heard about Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, many of the offspring. Now, out of eagerness to churn the nectar of Krishna conscious topics, Krishna Gita, and to hear more, Pariksit Maharaj has asked Shukadev Goswami, please describe the next manus. So the next six manus are now being described. And now we'll hear about Gajendra. Now during the reign of the manus, there are many pastimes or incarnations of the Lord. The Lord appears in different incarnations. Many incarnations are described in this canto. So now we're about to hear about the first incarnation, who was Narayan himself, Vishnu himself, who appeared to the elephant devotee Gajendra. This is in the fourth manu, the period of the fourth manu. I think it's Chakshusha manu. Okay. So hearing, it was mentioned at the end of chapter 1, that Gajendra's pastime was briefly mentioned. So Shukadeva Goswami was asked by Pariksit Maharaj, please describe about Gajendra. So we discussed that three people get benefit when they hear Shastra. Who are the three people who get the benefit?
The speaker.
Yeah, so first of all, the speaker gets the most benefit because he is the most attentive. While you're speaking, you're very absorbed. That's why Prabhupada insisted that we preach Krishna consciousness. Don't just hear, but then repeat it to others. And then, the person who gets the second most benefit is the person who asks the questions. So someone who's very absorbed in the subject matter, they want to know, why did that happen, why did that happen? Just like when I hear Bhanu Swami give class, because he has so much knowledge, and he is so deeply absorbed. Then when I'm listening to him, I'm thinking, what about this, what about this, what about this, what about this? So you can ask questions to him, any senior devotee. But when we come in contact with someone who's very advanced in Krishna consciousness, then we should question, what about this, what about this, what happened? Try to understand all the intricacies. Our philosophy is very intricate. We should understand it nicely so we can explain it to others. People lose faith if they ask us questions and we cannot answer the questions. So we have to become learned in the Shastra, in the Srimad Bhagavatam especially, So when people ask questions, we can answer the questions. So we have to hear very attentively. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said to about Prabhupada, he said, I have marked him. He likes to hear. And Prabhupada said, because I am enthusiastic, or I was enthusiastic for Shravanam, now I am enthusiastic for Kirtanam, or preaching. So first you have to hear, then. So you have to be absorbed. And the person who gets the third lot of benefit is the hearer. And the person who gets the fourth lot of benefit is the one who falls asleep in the class. So please do not fall asleep in Bhagavatam class. Okay, so tonight we'll continue with chapter 2 and we'll hear about Gajendra Moksha, the great elephant, king of the elephants. His name was Gaja Indra. And Gaja means elephant. Indra means means like great king. Indra. Indra means it's a very high king or a great queen. So Indra or Gajendra means king of the elephants. Okay. Someone who is very powerful. And we'll hear about Gajendra and we'll see how powerful Gajendra was. Shukadev Goswami said, my dear king, there is a very large mountain called Trikuta. It is 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles high. Being surrounded by the ocean of milk, it is very beautifully situated. So how much is one yojana?
8 miles.
So how far is 8 miles? How much is what? 1.6? Or something like that. So then it must be 12 kilometers or something?
12.8.
12.8 kilometers, thank you very much. Thank you for coming to our class. See? We get so much when you come. So 12.8 kilometers, so how far is that? That's from here to, how far is it to the Gopals? I don't know how far it is, maybe 6 kilometers or something. So maybe twice as far, like that. So it's one yojana. So we're talking about a mountain which is 100,000 yojanas. So what we hear in the Bhagavatam is inconceivable. How can we understand all of these things? Inconceivable. Mountains that are 80,000 miles high and 80,000 kilometers wide. So these things are beyond estimation. So when you read Srimad Bhagavatam, it is a great chest of Shraddha, or faith. And one of the 12 aims of Shastric study is to develop faith and conviction. We have to be convinced about these things, because these things are not ordinary, and we cannot prove it. There is no proof. No? Has anyone ever seen a mountain which is 80,000 miles high? No one ever saw it. It's not documented anywhere. Right? The highest mountain on this earth is, Everest is like 36,000 feet or something, 31,000 feet or something, so... How many meters is that? 10,000 meters or something. Yeah, it's like 12,000. Yeah, so it's like 12,000 meters high. And we're talking about something which is 80,000 meters high. So it is a great test of faith, of Shraddha. And this is one of the purposes of studying Bhagavatam. We are meant to develop faith, or Shraddha. Now, I was giving the Sunday Feast lecture yesterday at the farm. We have a Sunday Feast program once a month. So I was telling the people, and Prabhupada would explain this, that you have a choice. Everything in life is based upon faith. Everything. Everything we do is based upon Shraddha or faith. We have faith in this, we have faith in that. Right? Why do we walk up the stairs? Because we have faith that the building is stable. Right? If we don't have faith that the building is stable, we won't come up here. So everything is based on faith. Right? You have faith when you drive down the road that everyone's going to stay on the left side of the road. Right? Except in India. Right? Everything will change. Right? Go from right to left or like that. But the system is, everything is based on faith. And spiritual life is based on one thing. Shraddha. Where does spiritual life begin? Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Vajana Kriya, Anatta Nivritta. It goes like that. That is the system. So how do we know, or how do we judge who is more advanced in Krishna consciousness? There's different ways to judge who is the most advanced devotee. And one of the criteria is Shraddha, or faith. When someone has more faith, then we understand they are more advanced. And when someone has complete faith, we understand they are the most advanced. That is called prema. Who is an example of someone who has prema? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yeah. In Jiva Tattva category. Someone who has Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada had complete faith in Krishna. That's why we understand that he is the most advanced devotee, complete faith. So we see how advanced we are. As we become more advanced, we overcome anattas. When you become more advanced, you become nishta, fixed, because your faith is strong. And then when you become more advanced, you get to ruchi, to asakti, to bhava, and then finally to prema. So it is an advancement of faith. That's what Krishna consciousness is based upon. So we see that in the Bhagavatam, it is a test of faith. Because here we're hearing in the first verse, the mountain is 80,000 miles high, 80,000 miles wide. We'll never see that. In this lifetime, we'll never experience these things. So people will believe in one thing, like we're discussing at the Sunday Feast Lecture yesterday. Basically, in the world at this point in time, there's two theories about how everything came about. One is evolution, one is creation. Now, we are creationists. We believe in creation, right? Intelligent design, that everything was made by God. Whereas the non-devotees, the non-believers, they believe in evolution. And these days, people are so confused, they believe in both. Just like one man, he spoke to me after the lecture yesterday at the farm, and then he was telling me, no, it is both. Science and religion have merged. That Krishna, or God, created evolution. And he created evolution, and that is how everything was created. So it is both. So I said to him, where is the evidence? He said, it's in the Bhagavad Gita. So I said, show me the shloka. He said, my Bhagavad Gita is at home. I said, the Bhagavad Gita is here. We have the same Bhagavad Gita here. He said, no, mine's different. And he said, I'll show you next time I come. So there's basically two systems of faith. You either have faith in evolution or in creationism. Right? Now, creationism, as it is spoken in biblical terms, is very simplistic. God created everything in 7 days. If you've read the Bible, all of you are good Christian people. So you've read the Bible, I think. So if you read the Bible, it says in 7 days. 6 days he created, and on the Sunday, the seventh day, he took rest, because it took a lot of energy. So he needed to have a day of rest to recover from 6 days of creating everything. Right? So it's very simplistic. It didn't happen like that. According to the Bhagavatam, it happens in one moment. Creation happened by Krishna's Ichcha Shakti. What is Ichcha Shakti? Desire or will, right? Krishna just wills something or desires something, and that thing happens. So when Krishna desires, the material world manifests, then it just happens, just out of desire, right? We read in the Bhagavatam, there is a glance, and the glance has Kriya Shakti, Ichcha Shakti, Jnana Shakti within the glance, and just by that glance, everything manifests. So it happens in a moment, the entire creation. So these things are very wonderful, and we cannot prove it empirically. Right? There was no proof of the way it describes in the Bhagavad Gita the world was created. There's no proof of the way the Bible says the world was created. And there's no proof the way that Charles Darwin says the world was created. Evolution, there's no proof. So it is a system of faith. So you put your faith in one or the other. Right? And people say to us, it is a great leap of faith, and you guys are you have very vivid imaginations, the way you think everything took place. But then we will say back to them at the same time, then you also have a very vivid imagination. That a monkey gave birth to a human being who fell out of a tree. Where is your missing link? It is not there. So either way, it is based upon Shraddha or faith, spiritual life. So Bhagavad Gita here, through this whole description we're about to read tonight, at many places in the Bhagavad Gita, it is simply a test of faith. Do you believe it or not? Do you believe that there is a mountain that is 80,000 miles high? Hands up if you believe it. Okay. All of you are brainwashed. Brainwashed. Prabhupada's brain is dirty. So now it's washed, then you understand these things. So it requires, and Burujan Prabhu explained this to me one time, and Bhagavad Gita explains the same point in the second chapter of the first canto. In order to understand all of this, you must be situated in the mode of goodness. Because from the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion, which is the way modern society is, they cannot understand these things. It is only when you have sattva gun, or the mode of goodness, that you can understand these things to some extent. Therefore, you must follow a sattvic lifestyle. So Srila Prabhupada gave us a sattvic lifestyle, four regulative principles. This is sattva gun. Without sattva gun, you cannot understand Krishna consciousness. You cannot understand the higher principles of Krishna consciousness. And you must live a sattvic lifestyle. That means you have to eat sattvic food. Very interesting, because Indian food these days is very famous for what? Being very hot, right? And the main ingredient for the heat is what? Chili, right? Now, chili does not come from India, right? It is a hybrid which was introduced into the system. So it's not actually part of the Vedic cuisine. If you go to Jagannath Puri, as an example, the same recipes they've been using for thousands of years, they're still using today. Same recipe. And chili is not in any of the preparations. So it was introduced. So if you're eating too much chili, how can you be in sattva gun? Because chili itself is not sattva gun. Which mode of material nature is chili in? Yeah, Rajagun. Right? If you have too much chili, you will become too passionate. And then how will you understand Krishna consciousness? Interesting, because Lord Jagannath is Krishna. And Krishna, you see, Lord Jagannath, he's the most famous deity in India for taking bhog. Right? He has the most bhog and the most opulent offerings. He doesn't take chili. Very interesting. So be careful what you offer Krishna. How do you know he likes chili? You like chili. How do you know he likes it? I don't think he even eats it. Traditionally, I don't think he eats it. I mean, he eats whatever we offer with love and devotion. But he actually says in Gita, food which is too spicy, too sour, too salty, he says all these things, this is mode of passion. What is that one? Yeah, that's a good point. So everyone in Tamagun, you should have chili. But everyone in Rajagun, you should begin to eat sattvic food. Like that. So it is necessary. In other words, if you want to understand the Bhagavad Gita, you have to be in the mode of goodness, sattva. Necessary. Because Prabhupada says, from sattva comes Shuddhasattva, pure goodness. Right? And the Bhagavad Gita says, back in the second chapter of the first canto, it says that you can only get to pure goodness from the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness, you really get situated in the mode of goodness in the platform of nishtha. Before nishtha, you're very much anattas. Anattas are very much connected to passion and ignorance. When the anattas clear, you become more situated in the mode of goodness. So here we are hearing about things which are extraordinary. Any points so far? Can we close the window? Is that possible? It's just starting to get a bit cold. Thank you. Maybe we can turn the lights on as well for this, just this end. Thank you. Good. Any points? Okay. Now, that mountain is surrounded by an ocean of milk. Have you seen it? No. So this is, Prabhupada will describe in this section of the Bhagavatam, there are many oceans which are described in the Bhagavatam itself. There is a milk ocean. There is an ocean of salt water, which we have here. There is an ocean of sweet water. There is an ocean of sugar cane juice. There's a honey, is it?
Honey?
Yogurt, mango juice. Now you're making everything up. It says in the Bhagavatam there is a river of mango juice which comes off, is it Mount Meru, I think? Like that. It's a river. I haven't heard of the ocean. But there are so many different things which we don't experience. So it does not mean they are not true. It just means we have not experienced it yet. Now, Prabhupada was sitting in this temple just below us, giving class. And at the end of the class, he'd been describing a famous lecture, how the eagles fly from planet to planet, and they pick up the elephants, and then they feed the elephants to their young babies. Now, the eagles are so big, intergalactic eagles who travel from planets, and they feed elephants to the babies, like that. At the end of the class, Prabhupada said, any questions? Then one devotee put his hand up and he said, Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, yes. He said, you were describing eagles which go from planet to planet? Prabhupada said, yes. And Prabhupada, they feed babies to the young? And Prabhupada said, yes. And he said, Prabhupada, it's very difficult to understand this. And he said, Prabhupada said, what would you know? You're still in the womb of your mother. So we're so much in the mode of ignorance, we're so covered by the material energy, these things may seem extraordinary. But for someone who's purified, it's not extraordinary. It's entirely possible. But it's not here on this earth. It's not here. We won't experience it in this lifetime. But Prabhupada points out that from the Bhagavatam, you can travel to another planet. Easy journey to other planets. You just read the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam describes what is taking place all over the universe. It is like a travel brochure for the whole universe. You can understand what is on the other planets, what they are like there. Just like when they went to the moon, and they said the moon was full of craters and dust like that. Prabhupada said, that is not the moon. Because Bhagavatam does not describe the moon like that. Bhagavatam says the moon has grass which is glowing. But when they went to the moon, they did not report anything like that. So Prabhupada said, that was not the moon. Prabhupada said it was a hoax. Or, one time he conceded, he said, if they did go anywhere, they landed on the Rahu planet. Because the Rahu planet is like a dark planet. He said, maybe they landed there. He said, but they did not go to Chandraloka. The length and breadth of the mountain are the same measurement, 80,000 miles. Its three principal peaks, which are made of iron, silver, and gold, beautify all directions and the sky. The mountain also has other peaks which are full of jewels and minerals, and are decorated with nice trees, creepers and shrubs. The sounds of the waterfalls on the mountain create a pleasing vibration. In this way, the mountain stands, increasing the beauty of all directions. So Srila Prabhupada has said, also, and it's described in Vedic literature, that even in the Himalaya, there are mountain peaks which are made of solid gold. So these things are even there on this earth, but we may not see it because of their snow, and it may be deep within the Himalaya. But this is describing a higher planetary system at this point in time. So the peaks of the mountains, Trikuta, which means like it's a three-pointed mountain, three principal peaks. One is iron, one is gold, one is silver. So just like the different ages, Kali Yuga is the Iron Age. Dwapara Yuga is the Bronze. Treta Yuga is the Silver. And Satya Yuga is the Golden Age. So each age is represented. It means that each age has a different level of Dharma attached to it, or a different level of purity. Now, in Satya Yuga, it says in the Bhagavatam, everyone is practically a Paramahamsa. It means everyone is very advanced in consciousness in Satya Yuga. They live for a very long time, and they have a very strong inclination towards spiritual life. Then, as the Yuga progresses, and we go to the Treta Yuga, in the Treta Yuga, the inclination towards religion or Dharma becomes less. And people's duration of life also decreases. And then in the Dwapara Yuga, even less, religion becomes less prominent, or Dharma becomes less prominent. It's considered to be like the Bronze Age. And then we go into the Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is said to be the Iron Age. Iron is the least valuable of the four metals. And we see in Kali Yuga everything is made of iron. Mm-hmm. Everything is made of steel. That's why it is called the Iron Age. It's very gross, very dense. And when you live in buildings which are surrounded by steel, you pick up the vibration of the iron, and it becomes very dense. And you see, like, the cities are very iron and steel orientated now. You see people are becoming more and more dense in their consciousness also. I notice that because where I live, the house is made of earth, and it has a very different vibration. And it affects your consciousness in a very different way. It's very sattvic. I took people in there on the weekend to show them. I was describing it. And then, we have earth floor, cow dung floor. I remember when we actually laid the floor, Manigriva Prabhu took me down to the dairy down the road, and we had to collect all the cow dung. So the cows come to be milked, and after they left, we went with the shovel and we picked up all the cow dung. And cow dung, if you actually touch it and experience it, it has a great deal of shakti within it, because the energy of the cow is going into it. That's why it is antiseptic or pure. It has a special vibration. So then when we put that into the earth, into the floor, we have the cow dung floor, it has this very special sattvic vibration. Very beneficial. So, hands up if you own your own house. Everyone's renting? Okay, get a couple of you. So you can put cow dung there. You have the option. Like that. Those who are renting, then you can't put the cow dung there. If you want us to collect it, we can. Or if you want to come down, it takes a couple of hours, you just shovel it like that.
It has to be council passed. Even if you own your own home, it still has to be passed by
the council.
Development application.
You just don't tell them.
That's against the law, isn't it?
Yeah. We don't do everything according to the law. Sometimes we just put in cow dung floors, we don't tell them. Sometimes we have cow dung floors, we've had them for hundreds of years, and then until the government finds out. So part of our
that's
good. But the cow dung helps to bind it.
The grasses and stuff, would you add grass?
No, you don't have to add grass, because there's a lot of grass in cow dung. So when you mix that, that's what kind of keeps it all bound up. Kowtowing is very, very powerful. You see, in Africa, in India, in a lot of these ancient cultures, they use kowtowing on the floors and on the walls. And even there's one shop in Vrindavan, you know that shop, Gangotri, down there in Loy Bazaar. You go in there, and the whole wall, as you go up the stairs, the whole wall is just kowtowing. And it's a natural greenish colour, because the cows are eating very greenish grasses. According to the type of grass they eat, they have different colours of kowtowing also. Very subtle. So if you're in your own home, we can assist you. Talk to you, if you like. So, the three peaks are made of the three types of metals. Once again, this is very extraordinary, that an entire mountain peak will be made of solid gold. You know, imagine if the non-devotees found out about these things. Because it actually says in the Shastra that in the Himalaya, there are mountain peaks made of solid gold. So if they believe these things, they would actually go looking for them. Like that. It would be very difficult to find. Any questions? So far.
This cow dung is a very good fertilizer and also used for fuel, making gas for cooking.
Yeah. Yeah, we want to do that on the farm in the future also. That's one of our desires, is to create the methane gas from the cow dung. Like that, so. Give us your blessings that we can. Okay. The ground at the foot of the mountain is always washed by waves of milk that produce emeralds all around in the eight directions, north, south, east, west, and the directions midway between them. So now the Bhagavatam is really becoming very descriptive, and now it will really test people's faith. That the milk which is flowing down the mountain creates emeralds on the ground. Hands up if you believe this. So this is extraordinary.
Okay. It doesn't like cow's milk either. It could be sap milk from trees, like in plants, isn't it? Or does it say...
No, it's cow's milk.
It is?
Yeah, specifically cow's milk. Okay. So it's extraordinary, which is taking place here. But there are things which are far beyond what we experience. And Prabhupada points this out, that what we have here on earth, what we are attached to, is insignificant compared to the heavenly planets. Prabhupada explains that everyone on earth, all the men, are attached to the women. But he said the women on earth are like frogs compared to the women in the heavenly realm. And then Prabhupada says that the women in the heavenly realm are insignificant compared to the women in Vaikuntha. And the women in Vaikuntha are insignificant compared to the women in Vrindavan, the gopis. So everything we're attached to on this earth is very gross. But everyone is attached. You see, everyone on earth is attached to the opposite sex. But if we saw the opposite sex from the higher realms, we would see that this is insignificant, what we're experiencing here.
Not everyone.
Not everyone, I'm saying generic. I'm speaking at 99% of the population. Not you, but everyone else.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'll read the purport. So, Savannah, you want to read them?
From Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that there are various oceans. Somewhere there is an ocean filled with milk, somewhere an ocean of liquor, an ocean of heat, an ocean of oil, and an ocean of clean water. Thus there are different varieties of ocean within this universe. The modern scientists who have only limited experience cannot defy these statements. They cannot give us full information about any planet, even the planet on which we live. From this verse, however, we can understand that if the valleys of some mountains are washed with milk, this produces emeralds. No one has the ability to imitate the activities of material nature as conducted by the Supreme Personality of God.
Any further points? The inhabitants of the higher planets, the Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, Vijadharas, serpents, Kinnaras, and Apsaras, go to that mountain to sport. Thus, all the caves of the mountain are full of these denizens of the heavenly planets. Shukadev Prabhu, can you read that?
As the ordinary men may play in a salty ocean, the inhabitants of higher planetary systems go to the ocean of milk. They float in the ocean of milk and also enjoy the various sports within the caves of Srikuta Mountain.
So, any points? So broadly speaking, the Vedas, the Bhagavatam, describes there are three planetary systems, which when we chant Gayatri Mantra, we say Bhura, Bhuva, Swa. So Swa means the higher planets, Bhura, Bhuva, so the middle planetary system and the lower planetary system. So three broad divisions. Then within the three, there are further divisions of 14. So it says there are 14 planetary systems, which are listed within the Bhagavatam. So below us, there are different, what are called subterranean heavenly planets and hellish planets. What are the names of these planetary systems? Very good. Very good. So these different planetary systems, Rasatala, Talatala, Sutala, Talatala, Tala, Patala and Tala Tala, Patala Tala Tala, Tala Pala. So these are the different planetary systems which are there. So most of them are called subterranean heavenly planets. So the planets themselves, the planetary systems, the sun has described at the end of the fifth canto, the sun does not reach those places. So they are all illuminated by the jewels on the heads of the Nagas, the serpents. And there are many jewels there, like this. So in some places it says that these planetary places, which are systems, which are designed, the cities are designed by Maya Dhanava and the other demons, the architects of the demons, they're even more opulent than the heavenly planets above us. But the difference is that down on these planets, people are atheistic. They don't follow Dharma, they don't follow religion, and they're just absorbed in sense gratification. And at the end of their lives, they don't go any closer to God because of their atheistic ways. In the lower planetary systems, there is also a hellish realm where people go to suffer. Yamaraj takes them there and he sends them to certain planets, and they also suffer according to their sinful reactions. Now, above us, there are also a number of planetary systems. What are they called? Swa. But what are the Swa called? Above Earth there is Swaga. Swaga means the heavenly realm. And then above that there is Jana, Tapa, Maha, and finally Satyaloka. Right there. What's that? Brahmaloka is Satyaloka. Same. So the middle planetary system, which we're on, in the Bhagavatam, it is called Mrityuloka or Marchaloka. What does Mrityu mean?
Death.
So why is our planetary system called the place of death? Yeah, because you don't live for a long time. So it says that of all of the planets within the universe, and there are hundreds and thousands of planets, just like last night, actually the moon was very bright last night because it was the second day after Purnima. But last night the sky was crystal clear. I went outside in the nighttime to pass water. It was just crystal clear like that. But the moon was very bright, so it was drowning out all the stars. But if you go out in the dark night, you see all the stars, all the planets, there's hundreds of thousands of stars. Now it says out of all of those planets, there are only two planets in this entire universe that you can go back to the Loka Vrindavan or Vaikuntha from. What are the two planets? Yeah. Marchaloka and Brahmaloka. So from Lord Brahma's planet, you can go back to the spiritual world gradually. If you get there, it takes a long time to get there, and then you can go back to the spiritual world. If Lord Brahma himself becomes liberated. And the other place is Earth. So
Brahmaloka, you can leave that planet to the spiritual world only at the time of dissolution. You can't go any time other than the Earth.
Yeah, you have to wait for the universe to finish. But it feels up there, it feels like 100 years. Even though it's long compared to us, but they feel like they're just living 100 years also. So on this Earth, it is said to be the best place on the planet to go back to the spiritual world, because it is Marchaloka. Because life is short here and you have a short duration of time to make spiritual progress. And here, it is the perfect balance. Earth is not too good and it's also not too bad. It is perfect for self-realization. Because when you're too disturbed, it's very hard to chant your rounds. Have you ever had this experience? What was it like when you had the car accident? What was it like trying to chant your rounds?
I couldn't.
You couldn't chant? Yeah. Same with me when I had my car accident. 3 weeks, I could not even chant. It just wasn't possible. My body was too disturbed. So, some places in the universe, you are so disturbed, you can't make spiritual advancement. Other places in the universe, it is so, there's so much sense gratification, it's also very difficult to concentrate. So Earth is the perfect place, because it is not too good and it is not too bad. Now, all the places on Earth, Melbourne is the best. Because it's not too good and it's not too bad. Melbourne's very good. I've travelled around. It's a good place. Other places in Australia and on the Earth, you get more bewildered, much easier. But Melbourne's, it's almost perfect here. You're not. Yeah, I was going to get to that. That's like the confidential. I can only speak that to several people. I can't say it to. But this place, it's an ideal place to make spiritual advancement. Because it is not too good, but it's not too bad. It's perfect for spiritual advancement. So we can make rapid advancement. And in this particular time, we've come 500 years after the Golden Avatar. Right? Which only happens once in a day of Brahma. Right? 1,000 Divya Yugas, right? You come after this particular form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Swayam Bhagavan himself has appeared in this set of Chaturyuga, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also appeared at this time. So there's no greater opportunity. We are the most fortunate living entities in existence, because we have the greatest opportunity. All we have to do is stay awake in Bhagavatam class. If you actually stay awake, you can make some advancement. And if you chant your rounds properly, right, you can make unlimited spiritual advancement. There's so much potency. Yeah. And in this particular temple, there is unlimited potency. As far as I've seen, I've never seen a temple more powerful than this outside of Mayapur and Vrindavan and Jagannath Puri. I've never seen a place more powerful. So we cannot understand how much opportunity we have. So here it is described, this place is Marchaloka. It is a perfect place for spiritual advancement. But now you have to take advantage of it. We hear this all the time, but it takes time for it to sink in. All the time we hear, you have to take advantage of it. It doesn't really sink in. But sooner or later, it has to enter deep in our consciousness. We just have to take advantage of this opportunity. And just put all of our energy into going back to Krishna. So, any points?
Yes, Melbourne is good. The temple is good, but the weather is not good. I was in New South Wales and I was in perfect health.
And since the time I was from here, I got arthritis. And it gets worse because of the corona.
So, maybe a change.
So it is not too good and it is not too bad.
The temple is good.
Yeah. No, but that's why I said Melbourne was the best place of all, because it's just enough suffering here to make us.
It's difficult to suffer.
What's that?
It's difficult to suffer.
Yeah, but it's not too much. It's just enough to make us detached, but it's not too much that we can't make some advancement. It's a blessing. Otherwise, you can move to Wollumbah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Okay. Because of the resounding vibrations of the denizens of heaven singing in the caves, the lions there, being very proud of their strength, roar with unbearable envy, thinking that another lion is roaring in that way. Jagannath Rampur, would you like to read that?
In the five planetary systems, there are not only different types of human beings, but also animals like lions and elephants. There are trees, and the land is made of snow. Such is the creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has come in this regard. Keshava Kuya Jagat Vichitra. My Lord Keshava, your creation is colorful and full of varieties. Geologists, botanists, and other so-called scientists speculate about other planetary systems. But being able to estimate the variety on other planets, they falsely imagine that all planets but this one are vacant, uninhabited, and full of dust. Although they cannot even estimate the varieties existing throughout the universe, they are very proud of their knowledge, and they are accepted as learned by persons of a similar caliber, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Swavit, Varahostha, Karai, Samasthita, Purusha, Pashu. Materialistic leaders are praised by dogs, hawks, camels and asses. And they themselves are also big animals. One should not be satisfied with the knowledge imparted by a big animal. Rather, one must gain knowledge from a perfect person like Sukadeva Goswami. Mahajana Yena Kathasatam. Our duty is to follow the instructions of the Mahajana. There are 12 Mahajanas and Sukadeva Goswami is one of them. Vayasaki is Sukadeva Goswami. Whatever he says, he considers to be factual. That is perfect.
Any interesting points?
Materialists are clouded their knowledge.
So it means the Bhagavatam is all true.
Okay. Any other points?
You get the full knowledge when we follow the knowledge given by the Acharya through this specific succession. If we speculate, then there is nothing. So here, the Prabhupada is mentioning that we have to take the words that are spoken by Sukadeva Goswami as it is.
How can they appear that the singing of the then it will just like go. Actually, they are very spiritual in my business. That's why they are in heaven.
Is there anyone on earth who can answer this question? Very difficult to.
Very advanced in other ways.
It means on the heavenly planets, the people are not necessarily spiritually advanced. They are devotees and they're pious, but they're not like the most advanced devotees because they're so attached to sense gratification. So Swarga is a higher planetary system, and Prabhupada says that very pious people, they go to Swarga, but because of the amount of sense gratification there, it's hard for people to develop detachment. So above Earth there is Swarga, and above Swarga there is Jana, Tapa, Maha. So on those places, that's where the more advanced devotees are. In Swarga itself, I mean, they're advanced devotees, they're devotees and they're advanced, but still they're not the most purified. So the lines there are not the most purified lines, but they're quite pure. Does that answer your question?
I think so.
Okay, thank you. Well, it says it's surrounded by the milk ocean. And
milk ocean is full of enormous salt people and sea ones, and that was in the same line.
Yeah, the same line. It says that the seems like it's somewhere in the area of Swarga, because it says that Varuna has created this particular forest. So I can't say exactly where it is or how the universe is constructed, but it's a heavenly realm. It's above Earth. It's a heavenly planet, or it's a heavenly area. Like that. Because it says the demigods go there, the Gandharvas go there, the Apsaras go there. Like that. So, as Prabhupada has described all through this section, that we have to follow the Mahajanas, the great souls who actually understand what is the truth. So it is the same thing, we have to make our decision. Will we have faith in modern materialistic science and philosophy, or will we have faith in the Vedic literatures? Now, Hari Sori Prabhu, he was living with Prabhupada every day for 15 months. And he said that every single day that he was with Prabhupada for those 15 months, Prabhupada attacked the material scientists. It was one of Prabhupada's favourite pastimes. And even one time, Prabhupada was translating his purport, I think it's Canto 7, I can't remember, I think it was Canto 7. And Hari Sori Prabhu was reading the manuscript, I think it was, even before it came out, and Prabhupada translated. And then Hari Sori Prabhu saw there was some like mistake that Prabhupada had made. I think it was about Hiranyakashipu, about, because there's an argument in Ahobalam in India, that they say the whole pastime of Nisringadeva and Hiranyakashipu took place here on Earth at that place, and the Bhagavatam specifically says it was in the heavenly planets. So there's like a debate which is going on. So then Prabhupada had written a purport and he was making some reference, and then he attacked the scientists, and then while he was writing he'd made some mistake in what he said. So Hari Sori Prabhu, he was reading it and he picked it up and he took it into Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, you've made a mistake here in the way you've written it and what you've written. And Prabhupada said, read it to me. And then they read it to Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said, yeah, I have actually made a mistake. But he said, I just wanted to attack the scientists. And that was his main emphasis. He just saw an opportunity in the purport or in the verse to attack the scientists, so he attacked them. So every day Prabhupada was attacking. Why? Because they are misleading the people. Because at this point in time, everyone has faith in the scientific community. But the scientific community themselves are covered by ignorance. And they're misrepresenting facts. Therefore, in the final 2 years of Prabhupada being on the planet, he put incredible emphasis on the Bhaktivedanta Institute. In developing a Krishna conscious scientific institute, which could then debate with the materialistic scientists. So far, some very powerful books have come out from the Bhaktivedanta Institute. What are some of the books which have been published?
Forbidden Archaeology.
Yep. Any others? Hidden History of the Human Race, like that. So if you read any of these books, like Forbidden Archaeology, which is an excellent resource material, it describes that the scientific community are misleading the public, right, in a very calculated way. So Prabhupada was attacking that system. And His Holiness Devamrita Swami has also written his book, which is called In Search of Vedic India. So in that book he's also uncovering many of the discrepancies which are there in the scientific community. So once again, Prabhupada is saying you have to choose who you're going to follow. Now, why do we choose the Mahajans as opposed to the scientists? Because of the caliber or the quality of the character of the person. Because we saw Srila Prabhupada, or we've read about Srila Prabhupada, and we've seen what type of person he was and the type of character he had. As opposed to many of the modern scientists who may be very intelligent people, but what is the character and what is their consciousness and their state of heart? So you have to put your faith according to the person, not just the knowledge. And that's why we have faith in the devotees, because the devotees have auspicious qualities. And that inculcates our faith. It's not just the knowledge, but it's the qualities which make us have faith. Well, that's all.
You mentioned that there was a Gandhi's phone call at Ekpa, and she was one of the greatest Gandhi's controllers and knew the existence of God, and he was having the energy, and he was the best ever scientist. I can't even figure out what he was talking. And they couldn't even understand anyone to this day. They were discovering few things, and he was into this wireless technology, and even wireless electricity, but actually they made it impossible because of the politics, and those who couldn't meter and build the people for that electricity, that's why they didn't do it. But he actually invented so many things ecological, and he admitted the existence of God, and he's getting this from the intelligent source of the universe. He was very intelligent. He knew about the existence of the soul, and he said that we are only temporary here. He was really
Also one time Prabhupada was in a Pandal program, and he had thousands of people there, and he asked Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj to speak. And Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj was speaking in a very scientific way, and it's hard for the people to understand. And some of the devotees said, Prabhupada, they can't understand. Prabhupada said, that is good. He said, because if they can't understand it, they'll respect it more. They'll think, oh, this person is very... Because that's what the scientists are like. We can't understand them, so you think, oh, they must be very intelligent. So he said, when Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, he said, they can't understand it, they'll think, oh, this is very good. Right. So this is modern science. Half the time we can't even understand what they're talking about. So everyone thinks, oh, they must be right. But Prabhupada would say, no. Life comes from life. It does not come from. He would challenge.
See, Srila Prabhupada is a wise scientist because he was trying to put everybody go towards the Krishna and Lord. And the scientists, they were trying to keep everybody away from Lord. And so they were degrading, trying to degrade people.
The valleys beneath Trikuta Mountain are beautifully decorated by many varieties of jungle animals. And in the trees, which are maintained in gardens by the demigods, varieties of birds chirp with sweet voices. Trikuta Mountain has many lakes and rivers and beaches covered by small gems resembling grains of sand. The water is as clear as crystal, and when the demigod damsels bathe in it, their bodies lend fragrance to the water and the breeze, thus enriching the atmosphere. Ananda Balabhaprabhu, can you read it?
Even in the material world, there are many grades of living entities. The human beings on earth generally cover themselves with external fragments to stop their bad bodily odors. But here we find that because of the bodily fragrance of the demigods, of the demigod damsels, the rivers, the lakes, the breeze, and the entire atmosphere of Trikuta Mountain also become fragrant. Since the bodies of the damsels in the upper planetary system are so beautiful, we can just imagine how beautifully formed are the bodies of the Vaikuntha damsels or the damsels in Vrindavana, the gopis.
Mm. So what are the points? Yes.
When
the gopis stayed baby for the Rani and when she shook her hair with her hair, that's the spell is a fragrance on earth as in the form of rose. Mm. Any other points? Mm. So, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Abrahmana, Bhuvana, Loka, that this material world from the highest place to the lowest place, all the places of suffering wherein repeated birth and death take place. So we should not become bewildered by the descriptions of swaga, because many people do. That the entire Karmakanda portion of the Vedas is based upon this. It says that 96% of the Vedas, right, is to try to entice you to do yajnas, perform dharma, do religious activities so that you can go to swaga and you can enjoy. So we should not become bewildered, because devotees may read this and they may think, oh, it's very nice. I also want to, some material desires can come in the heart. I want to go to a place like this where the women do not smell, where they have beautiful fragrances. And where the sand of the river is made of very small particles of jewels. And where there are beautiful fruit trees and forests. So we should not become bewildered by this situation. That's why on earth everything is perfect. Because even when you go to the most beautiful place, there's still some problem. Even in Malaysia, there is problem.
But you said previously that in the Patalok and the Mediterranean servers, they are more opulent.
Yep.
So if they are more opulent, then why do the demons want to go in the swaga and cover the demigods?
Because the acharyas explain that even when you have a kingdom, or when you have great opulence, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that after some time, because matter is dead, so even when you have a very opulent situation, because it is dead, there is no life in it. So after some time, you will want someone else's property. So even though the demons are in Patalok and they have a beautiful situation, but after some time they become, we need something else, and they go and attack heaven too. It's the nature of the material world. So we should not become bewildered by the descriptions which are there in the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is testing us to see if we will become attracted. Prabhupada said there is no place of happiness on this earth. He said if there is one place, it is Hawaii. But you go to Hawaii, there's problems there as well. Like that. Doesn't matter where you go on earth. So it's like, have you been in Australia? There's many beautiful places. Have you been to Cairns? It's like north of Brisbane. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. But if you go there, 6 months of the year, they have jellyfish, which are poisonous, blue box jellyfish, in the ocean. So you can only swim where the nets are. Right? Six months of the year, there are crocodiles. So you have to be careful. And I remember one person, they told me they went up there for a holiday and there were, you know, those big marsh flies, big flies, and when they bite, they have a sting. We had them at our farm. They went up there, they had a holiday. So they went up there for a holiday to Cairns, and when they went on the beach, there was a plague of marsh flies, so they couldn't stay on the beach. So this is the material world. Wherever you go, it won't work out. So earth is perfect. In the heavenly planets, there's no marsh flies, right? There's no jellyfish, right? There are crocodiles, which are there. But it's enjoyable there. Whereas here on the earthly planet, it doesn't matter where you go, it just never works. That's why earth is the best of all the planets. Okay. So we'll read to verse 19. So I'll read through the description. In a valley of Trikuta mountain, there was a garden called Ritumat. This garden belonged to the great devotee Varuna and was a sporting place for the damsels of the demigods. Flowers and fruits grew there in all seasons. Among them were mandaras, parijatas, patalas, ashokas, champakas, chutas, piyalas, panasas, mangoes, amratakas, kramukas, coconut trees, date trees, and pomegranates. There were madukas, palm trees, tamalas, asanas, arjunas, arishtas, udumbaras, plakshas, banyan trees, kimshukas, and sandalwood trees. There were also pichumadas, kovidaras, saralas, suradarus, grapes, sugarcane, bananas, jambu, badaris, akshas, abayas, and amalakis. You recognize some of these trees? Many of them are Ayurvedic trees, which are mentioned in the Ayurveda, and they have medicinal properties. So this is natural opulence. Natural opulence means just by eating the fruit of the amla tree, it gives you great health benefit, very high in vitamin C, amalaki. So it's used in Ayurvedic medicine to give energy and to rejuvenate. So this is the heavenly planets. All these trees are just there. Like in Albert Park, what do we have? Yeah, we have banana trees, which never produce bananas. What else do we have? Olives. Yeah, that's about the only thing we have in Albert Park, olives. Right? And if you go and pick them, the old Greek man will come and tell you to, because he planted the trees. But if you go in the backyards of all these Greek people, they have lemon trees, like straight across the road, Pete. He's a tailor. If you ever need some stitching done, he's a very good tailor straight across the road from the temple. Pete is an old Greek man. And if you go into his backyard, he has a big lemon tree, he has tomato plants, he grows a lot of things. But you can't just walk in there and take them. In the heavenly planets, you just go anywhere, there's just fruit trees everywhere. Very auspicious. Whereabouts? America.
In Seattle.
Yeah, of course. Whereabouts?
Clayton.
Adelaide is like that also. Adelaide. If you go to Adelaide, many places you walk around, there's fruit trees everywhere. Not that simple. It's auspicious.
What is the lake creation by today?
Varuna.
Varuna. Mm-hmm. Because I read somewhere the
Oh, that's Kuvera, yeah. That was on Earth, that pastime. That was in the Himalayas.
Okay.
Like that, so. This is different. This is Varuna. This one's. In that garden, there was a very large lake filled with shining golden lotus flowers, and the flowers known as Kumuda, Kalara, Udpala, Shatapatra, which added excellent beauty to the mountain. There were also Bilva, Kapita, Jambira, and Balataka trees. Intoxicated bumblebees drank honey and hummed with the chirping of the birds, whose songs were very melodious. The lake was crowded with swans, karandavas, chakravakas, cranes, and flocks of water chickens. Dutch yuhas, koyashtis, and other murmuring birds. Because of the agitating movements of the fish and the tortoises, the water was decorated with pollen that had fallen from the lotus flowers. The lake was surrounded by kanumba flowers, vetasa flowers, nalas, nipas, vanjulakas, kundas, kurubakas, ashokas, shirishas, kutajas, ingudas, kubjakas, swana yutis, nagas, punnagas, jatis, malikas, shatapatras, jalakas, and madhavi latas. The banks were also abundantly adorned with varieties of trees that yielded flowers and fruits in all seasons. Thus the entire mountain stood gloriously decorated. So this is the natural opulence. In Kali Yuga, this becomes less and less prevalent. Now it's very hard to find good fruit. Many of the fruits that we eat, like the tropical fruits, the mangoes, the bananas, the pawpaw, it's all coming from Queensland because we can't grow it here anyway. And they don't send the good fruits down here. Very hard to get a good mango in Victoria, in Melbourne. If you go to Sydney, the mangoes are much better. If you go up to Queensland, you get very good mangoes. And the really good ones, they send over to Japan and those places. So this is the system these days, hard to get. But natural opulence means it will just be everywhere. So in Kali Yuga, this becomes less and less. Okay, so tomorrow night we'll finish the chapter. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai.